and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, May 31st. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Report. Homes sold dropped 25% in April. A&M Real Estate Center says year-over-year sales fell between 16.5% and 25.2% in Midland across West Texas. By Stuart Doreen. The number of homes sold in a month dropped dramatically in April compared to April 2022 in Midland County and across much of West Texas, according to the Texas A&M Real Estate Center. The center showed year-over-year sales fell between 16.5% and 25.2% in Midland, Ector, Tom Green, San Angelo, Taylor, Abilene, and Randall, Amarillo, and Canyon counties. Midland led the way with a decline of 25.2%, falling from 289 homes in April 2022 to 216 this April. In neighboring Ector County, the number of homes dropped 16.5% to 161. Other West Texas counties filled in the gap, with drops of 21.8% in Taylor County, 23% in Tom Green County, 24.1% in Randall County. Lubbock County was the outlier of the group. The number of homes sold there dropped by 6.4%. The Texas A&M Real Estate Center reported a similar trend across the state, with the number of homes sold in April dropping by double-digit percentages in Bayer, 13.34%, Dallas, 15.6%, and Travis, 28.5% counties. Statistics for Houston and Montgomery, Conroe, in April weren't available on Tuesday. I think folks are sitting tight right now, said realtor Victoria Prince of Victoria Prince & Company. With interest rates 2% higher than this time last year, they are definitely having an impact. Buyers are looking at hundreds of dollars more for the same house. Hopefully, once this debt ceiling situation is settled, so will interest rates. Additionally, we have roughly the same inventory numbers as 2017, but without an oil boom to account for those low inventory numbers. So there is not a lot to choose from for home buyers. While the number of homes sold is down, the dollar amount people in Midland County are receiving is near record levels. Texas A&M reported an average price of $388,803, which was the second highest monthly average since the center started reporting monthly statistics, trailing only $389,949 in August 2022. The average in April 2022 was $367,700. April was also the 56th straight month that the average price for a home sold in Midland County topped $300,000, a streak that goes back to September 2018. The $330,000 median price dropped from a record $345,000 in March, but it was still higher than the $325,000 reported in April 2022. The A&M Center also reported April was the 23rd straight month that the median price for a home sold in Midland County reached $300,000 in a month. Midland's median price for a home sold was $73,000 more than the next closest county in West Texas, $257,000 in Randall County. Other median prices for a home sold in April included $244,000 in Lubbock, $240,000 in Ector, $226,982 in Taylor, and $215,500 in Tom Green. Other notes from the A&M Real Estate Center report included 421 homes available at the end of April in Midland County, down nearly 20% from April 2022. 1.8 months of inventory available, down from 2.0 months in April 2022. Months of inventory across West Texas ranged from 1.8 in Midland to 2.6 in Taylor County. This article is entitled Buzzing Ahead, YWLA's Jayakumar Advances to National B Quarterfinals, by Stuart Doreen. Young Women's Leadership Academy student Shweta Jayakumar will appear in Wednesday's quarterfinals at the Scripps National Spelling Bee in Oxon Hill, Maryland. The soon-to-be ninth grader spelled two words and defined another to claim her spot among the best 121 spellers in the field. It wasn't without a few nerves, as Jayakumar was making her debut on the Scripps stage. In 2021, the Scripps National Spelling Bee was a virtual contest, with contestants appearing from their respective homes. The event started with 231 spellers. Scripps's website showed 59 spellers were eliminated in round one, while another 33 couldn't define round two words. 19 spellers were eliminated in the third and final round Tuesday. "It will feel more like a competition," Jayakumar said of the quarterfinals. Jayakumar said there was relief getting her first words on stage behind her. She went in not wanting to pay attention to all that takes place during a nationally broadcasted bee, but having success allowed her to relax and even joke around with other spellers during commercial breaks. The Reporter Telegram Spelling Bee champion spelled pshent during the first round of the national bee. The Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary defines pshent as the headdress of the later Egyptian pharaohs, formed of two crowns worn by the respective pharaohs of Upper Egypt and Lower Egypt before the union of the country under one rule. Jayakumar then defined waiver, which is the act of purposely giving up a known claim or right, during round two. In round three, Jayakumar correctly spelled abfraction, which is defined as a mechanism that is postulated to explain loss of tooth enamel and dentin in the part of the tooth between the crown and root in the absence of tooth decay. The winner of the regional spelling bee in Odessa, A.J. Gunlapalli, also managed his way through the first three rounds to qualify for Wednesday's quarterfinals. Jayakumar is making her second appearance in the Scripps National Spelling Bee. She also advanced to the quarterfinals in 2021. The quarterfinals are set for 7 a.m. to noon Central Daylight Time Wednesday and will be broadcast on ION Plus. This article is entitled City of Odessa Provides Detail on $55 Million Sports Complex, by the Midland Reporter Telegram. The City of Odessa announced Tuesday that Larry Bell and his family have offered to donate up to 100 acres of land within the Parks Bell Ranch Master Plan development for a new City of Odessa sports complex. That represents a value of more than $5 million, the City of Odessa reported. Although the final details are yet to be worked out, the Bell family has identified a specific tract of land for the project. The proposed $80,000 to $100,000 square foot sports complex will be a public-private partnership, according to a City of Odessa news release. The overall estimated cost of the project is around $55 million, based on a recent feasibility study done by Synergy Sport Global for the City of Odessa. Current plans for the indoor facility include up to 20 volleyball courts, 10 basketball courts, and an indoor 200-meter banked competition track, according to the news release. The outdoor components will include 8 to 12 multipurpose fields for soccer, football, and lacrosse, and up to 8 baseball, softball fields. The next steps in this process are to work with the consultant to create a more defined budget and site plan for the facility, and to secure corporate sponsorships and naming rights agreements, the city reported. The goal is to begin the pre-development process by fall 2023 in anticipation of a fall 2024, spring 2025 opening. This article is entitled "Lawsuit Targets Greenwood Daycare" by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. A Midland parent is suing Greenwood Baptist Children's Learning Center, claiming caregivers at the daycare caused her 3-year-old son physical, emotional, and psychological harm, according to a complaint filed by the Button Law Firm. The mother claimed caregivers at the daycare left her son in a kitchen pantry with the lights off, sprayed him with toxic disinfectant, and forced him to sit next to a trash can for an excessive amount of time. The lawsuit also claims that the daycare violated state laws by waiting several days to report the incidents to the mother and the state of Texas. An investigation into the November 2022 incident conducted by the Texas Health and Human Services Commission revealed that the boy's mistreatment was common practice among caregivers with many of the children at the daycare, the lawsuit states. According to the suit, the state agency's investigation substantiated the mother's claims and cited Greenwood Baptist Children's Learning Center for breaking child care licensing laws, ranging from lack of competency to inappropriate discipline methods and accessibility of toxic chemicals to children. The complaint says that the church's board, director, and staff were aware of the frequent mistreatment of children at the daycare. The suit says leaders at the church intentionally ignored numerous reports that put an unimaginable number of children at direct risk of serious harm or injury, the lawsuit states. One of the daycare's caregivers saw her own child restrained to a chair with a seatbelt as a form of punishment, which led to her speaking out about the facility's abusive actions. The suit cites board members acknowledged the numerous incidents at the daycare were just adding up after seeing several incidents in a short time frame. We are disturbed by the abusive and negligent treatment that our client's young son endured at Greenwood Baptist Children's Learning Center, Button Law Firm attorney Russell Button stated in a press release. We are committed to holding the daycare accountable and hopefully, in the process of this lawsuit, protect other children in the Midland community from suffering similar traumatic experiences. The reporter Telegram made attempts to reach the daycare for comment, but received no response. This article is entitled "Midlander Accused of Injuring Children While Driving Intoxicated" by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. A Midland man was arrested Friday after injuring 2 children under the age of 10 while driving while intoxicated, according to court documents. Miguel Antonio Morin, 25, was being held Tuesday in Midland County Jail on 2 counts of injury to a child, elderly, disabled, reckless behavior, a state felony, abandon endangering a child, criminal negligence, a state felony, and driving while intoxicated with a child under the age of 15, a state felony. Bond was set at a total of $135,000. A Midland Police Department officer stopped at a red light at the intersection of North Midkiff Road and West Loop 250 and observed 2 cars run the red light. The officer was made aware by dispatch that both cars were involved in a disturbance at that intersection. Dispatch also stated that the driver of a black Mercedes was drunk and driving around with kids. The officer then traveled behind the cars on the South Service Road and observed one of the vehicles pulling over with its hazards on. The second car, a black Mercedes, was driving ahead of the officer on the service road at 70 miles an hour, according to the arrest affidavit. The black Mercedes then took the turnaround at Garfield Street and West Loop 250 and started to drive west at 75 miles per hour. The speed limit on the service road is 45 miles per hour. The officer was able to make a traffic stop in the 3100 block of West Loop 250 North. The officer observed Morin on his phone and two small children in car seats and a third sitting in between the car seat. When asked why he was running red lights and driving at a high speed, Morin denied doing both, according to the arrest affidavit. Morin stated he was trying to get his kids, but denied at first that the children in the back seat were his. The car also had heavy damage to the front right end and a shattered windshield on the passenger side with glass on the dashboard. Morin told the officer that the damage was 2 weeks old, according to the arrest affidavit. Once outside of the car, the officer smelled a strong odor of alcohol and observed that his speech was slightly slurred and his eyes were bloodshot, according to the arrest affidavit. The officer learned that the ages of the children were between 2 to 8 years old. The 8-year-old was crying and said his left arm hurt. He said that Morin took a turn at a high speed and caused him to be crushed between both car seats, according to the arrest affidavit. He also told officers Morin lied about the damage to the car not happening that night. The child stated that Morin was driving at a high speed and came to an abrupt stop, making his front passenger hit his head on the windshield and shattering it, according to the arrest affidavit. There was no front seat passenger during the traffic stop. The 3-year-old had a bloody nose, which the older child said was caused when she flew out of her car seat and hit her face on the headrest after Morin hit a bump, according to the arrest affidavit. The third child, a 2-year-old, was asleep in her car seat. The officer observed that both car seats were not properly fastened, according to the arrest affidavit. When asked why the children were not properly secured, Morin stated that they unfastened themselves when he was driving, according to the arrest affidavit. This article is entitled MPD, Man 27 Arrested for Threats Against Officers, by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. A 27-year-old man was arrested Sunday on a warrant for making threats to Midland Police Department officers in an extra-duty capacity, according to court documents. At about 9:45 p.m. Friday, officers working in an extra-duty capacity were alerted of a person at the front entrance of a place redacted on the affidavit. The man was refused entry due to his level of intoxication. The officers made contact with a male, identified as Bryce Andrew Burleson, who was being aggressive and was being physically restrained by his companions, according to the arrest affidavit. Burleson had his hand behind his back as if he was hiding a weapon while making threatening gestures toward the officers, according to the arrest affidavit. Burleson kept hiding his hand behind his back and yelled to the officers, "Which one of you wants to get lit up like the 4th of July?" Burleson also said the officers wouldn't do, and "I shoot straight," according to the arrest affidavit. His friends were able to put Burleson inside a car while driving off. Burleson quickly pointed a finger gun at the officers and yelled, "I'll see you soon," according to the arrest affidavit. Burleson was charged with terroristic threat against a peace officer, a state felony. He has since bonded out. This article is entitled "Oil Prices Sink Below $70," by Julia Fanzarez and Sheila Tobin, Bloomberg. Oil fell below $70 as the physical market for crude signaled that supplies are more than adequate to meet tepid demand. West Texas Intermediate June-July cash roll, which reflects crude supply balances at Cushing, Oklahoma, dropped to a discount of 30 cents a barrel, indicating lower demand for barrels being delivered in June than in July. Stockpiles at the delivery point for benchmark U.S. crude futures rose 1.05 million barrels in the week ending May 26th, according to traders who cited data from Wood Mackenzie. The futures market also reflected ample supply in the short term, as the front-month WTI spread deepened into contango, with shorter-dated contracts trading at a discount to longer-dated contracts. Crude prices have dropped about 13% this year amid China's lackluster recovery from its COVID-zero policy and concerns about aggressive monetary tightening in the U.S. All eyes will be on the OPEC Plus coalition's next meeting on June 4th. Last week, Russia said OPEC Plus is unlikely to take any further measures at its meeting, undercutting Saudi Arabia's warning to oil short sellers to, quote, watch out, unquote. Despite Russia having previously pledged to reduce output, its crude oil flows to international markets show no substantial sign of the curbs. Meanwhile, the country aims to boost its daily diesel exports from key Western ports by nearly a third in June, as some refineries resume full operations following seasonal maintenance. This article is entitled Police: Missing Teacher Brittany Sawyer Found, by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. A missing Ector County ISD teacher has been safely located, according to the Odessa Police Department. OPD shared on its Facebook on Tuesday that 35-year-old Brittany Sawyer was located, but did not provide details about where she was found. Sawyer, a teacher at Nimitz Junior High, was first reported missing on April 30th. No additional information was available about the circumstances. This article is entitled Report: Hawaiian Bros Island Grill Opening Midland Location, by the Midland Reporter Telegram. A Hawaiian Bros Island Grill is coming to Midland, according to the Facebook page Maybe in Midland, Odessa. The page reports that the fast food restaurant will be located next to Raising Cane's off Loop 250 and west of Midkiff Road, across from the Midland Park Mall. Our mission is to make Hawaii's island plate lunch as revered and loved on the mainland as it is in the islands. Sharing with Ohana, family, according to the Hawaiian Bros Island Grill Facebook page. The restaurant's website shows 17 current Texas locations, with the closest location to Midland being in the Fort Worth area. Coincidentally, there is no Hawaiian Bros Island Grill in Hawaii or west of Texas. This article is entitled UT Permian Basin Names New Fundraising Chief, by the Midland Reporter Telegram. The University of Texas Permian Basin announced Tuesday that Sandy Bliss has been named the new vice president of advancement. Bliss, who will begin her leadership role on June 19th, has more than 18 years of fundraising experience, most recently with the Virginia Tech Corps of Cadets as the chief advancement officer. In this role, she led the advancement team, which is made up of development, alumni relations, scholarships, stewardship, and communications, according to a news release from UTPB. Bliss led her team to reach the campaign goal 5 years ahead of schedule. Prior to that, Bliss was the senior development officer for Central Initiatives and Scholarships for the University of Miami Office of the Provost. Her work there as the lead fundraiser included building the plans and donor pipeline for a $500 million campaign for new student housing. We are thrilled to welcome Sandy to the Falcon family. She brings years of experience in leading and executing strategic advancement efforts at the university level. Sandy will oversee all operations of the advancement office, including alumni relations, UT Permian Basin President Sandra Woodley said in a statement. As the university begins our 50th birthday celebration, Sandy will play a vital role in garnering financial support for campus transformation, Mesa building renovations, academic programs, and UTPB's athletics master plan. I am honored to be joining UTPB. There is so much potential here, and I want to be a part of it, Bliss said in a news release. I was impressed by the community involvement, which is critical to the success of a university like UTPB. There are several exciting things happening at UTPB, but I have to say the newly renovated Seed Building is a crown jewel for the area. What a special and important place for donors to invest. Bliss is no stranger to the West Texas community. She spent many years working with donors in Midland and Odessa in previous roles. Bliss said she's ready to hit the ground running to help the university meet its philanthropic goals, according to the news release. President Woodley has a strong vision for UTPB, and I was immediately drawn in by her energy and excitement, Bliss said. I cannot wait to partner with her and other faculty and staff to achieve the goals of the university. This article is called Opinion. It is entitled, Now is the Time for Congress to Act, by Travis D. Stice, Diamondback Energy, Inc. U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and President Joe Biden delivered to Congress a debt deal where concessions were made on both spending and policy, and, if passed, avoids the looming fiscal cliff with significant negative consequences to our economy. Now is the time for Congress to act and vote to get this passed. From an energy viewpoint, particularly around permitting, the proposed legislation slashes some of the red tape that delays or cancels countless energy infrastructure proposals. This is important because the bureaucratic process has been holding back America's ability to build energy infrastructure for decades, which makes it harder for us to produce and move energy from the Permian to the American people, who want affordable and reliable energy to power their lives. Among wins for our industry, this agreement establishes a lead federal agency for environmental reviews, streamlines the process to establish one environmental document when multiple agencies are involved, and ensures that environmental reviews are confined to meet the purpose and need of the proposal, and that those reviews are actually technically and economically feasible. The agreement also limits the time and pages of reviews that a project undergoes, which are currently hundreds and hundreds of pages. Judicial options become available if there is a failure to meet deadlines in the permitting process. Because global energy demand is expected to grow by nearly 50% in the next 30 years, all of these represent important steps needed for streamlining the bureaucratic process that has made it harder to produce all forms of energy, including projects for non-traditional energy generation, like wind and solar, that have also been negatively impacted from delays in getting permits to build. Importantly, these reforms apply across the board, providing a level playing field for all forms of energy to help meet this growing demand. Texans know the economic prosperity that the oil and gas industry has brought to our nation, and we have no greater champion in D.C. for our industry than Representative August Pfluger. To consistently emphasize the importance of permitting reform, he has brought industry leaders to our nation's capital and members of Congress to Midland, Texas, the energy capital. This is a positive start, and not all problems will be solved in this one piece of legislation, but it does represent progress in a divided government, the type of progress I hope we can build on in the future. While there are folks on the right who don't think it goes far enough, and on the left who think it goes too far, I feel this piece of legislation is good for the American economy, good for our energy industry, and should be approved by Congress. Travis D. Stice is the chairman and CEO of Diamondback Energy, Inc. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, May 31st. Cheryl Ann Green. Cheryl Ann Green, age 64, died on Tuesday, May 23rd in Houston. A memorial service will be held on Friday, June 2nd at 10:30 a.m. at 14th and Main Church of Christ, where Cheryl was a member. Survivors include husband Jay Green of Cahoma, daughter Lauren Green Liggett, husband Will, and grandson Teddy Liggett of Austin, and son Ryan Green of Plainview. She is also survived by her brother David Seitenbach of Greeley, Colorado, sister Janet Hone and husband Rick of Larkspur, Colorado, brother-in-law Rodney Green of Lubbock, as well as many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by parents John M. and Lois Rowan Seitenbach of Denver, and father and mother-in-law Willie F. and Betty Joyner Green of Jal, New Mexico. Cheryl was born on May 25, 1958, to John and Lois Seitenbach of Denver. In lieu of flowers, please consider memorials to MD Anderson Cancer Center, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, and Eastern European Missions. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Azura Amore Browning, March 16, 2023 to May 22, 2023. Azura Amore Browning was born March 16, 2023 in Midland, to Quantarius Quan Browning and Elijah Gildon. Azura transitioned from this life on May 22nd. She was a beloved precious jewel and princess. Although her time on this side of heaven was brief, she left a lifetime of memories and moments that will be forever cherished. Death Notices. Javier De Lucas Gutierrez. Javier De Lucas Gutierrez, 67, passed away on Wednesday, May 24th. Viewing will be Wednesday, May 31st, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will be in Mexico at a later date. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
Bell family donates 100 acres to city for sports complex. The Bell family, which has been in Odessa for five generations, is donating up to 100 acres of land for the city of Odessa's future sports complex, a contribution city officials called a big step forward Tuesday. The donated land, which is worth an estimated $5 million, is located in the Parks Bell Ranch area, said Mayor Javier Hoven. The Bell family's generosity will also make it possible for the city to expand the facility that was proposed in April, said City Council member Mark Mata. Originally, the city envisioned a $14.5 million 70,000-square-foot facility with six basketball courts and 12 volleyball courts. For an extra $10 million, they could have added four 300-foot baseball-softball fields. Now they hope to build a 75,000 to 100,000-square-foot interior facility with 20 volleyball courts, 10 basketball courts, and a 200-millimeter banked competition track. Outside, they intend to build 8 to 12 multipurpose fields for soccer, football, and lacrosse, and up to 8 basketball/softball fields, Mata said. The new facility, which will have room to expand, is expected to cost $50 million. The city could break ground by the end of August, and the facility could be completed within 18 months from that time, Mata said. Hovian and Mata said the city has only been able to get to this point because of teamwork. Mata and council member Denise Swanner and their Quality of Life Committee has been working on the project, along with council member Steve Thompson and others, they said. The city is hopeful it will be able to build and maintain the facility through public/private partnerships. We're reaching out to different companies, different corporations for sponsorships. The one thing about this sports complex is that we're trying to make this affordable and easy to fund as possible. So we're really reaching out to these big corporations here in Odessa and the surrounding areas, Mata said. We reached out to some oil companies. We've reached out to some local company owners. We want this to be sponsored. We're going out and looking for naming rights. We're going to go out there to get help with the maintenance fees, to help with the cost of running the daily functions of this sports complex. We're thinking outside the box so we can be able to bring this and not have to have the citizens of Odessa foot the bill. Thompson said at least three people are interested in having naming rights already, and Swanner said sponsorship packets are ready and available. Mata said the city is also looking into setting up a nonprofit organization so it can accept donations. The facility is long overdue, and the city is looking forward to the extra hotel motel tax it will bring into the community, Swander said. Under the original plan, the city anticipated making $1.3 million a year by year five. But Thompson says he thinks the city could start making money day one under the new plan, thanks to all of the tournaments that will now be possible. The Odessa City Council agreed to hire Synergy Global for $15,000 on February 14th to conduct a sports complex feasibility study. More than 3,100 residents participated in a 10-question online survey gauged to determine their top priorities, and several more residents attended two community meetings on the facility. The vast majority of participants wanted the facility in either District 2 or District 4. They also listed basketball and volleyball courts at the top of their wish list, followed by indoor turf, baseball fields, and indoor batting cages. In April, Synergy discussed four potential sites for the complex: the Parks Bell land, city-owned land near the Ector County Jail, private land at I-20 and Loop 338, and private land behind Home Depot, known as the McKnight Family Ranch. The company also gave the city a variety of options in terms of amenities, with the most expensive being $41.5 million. The prices varied upon the number of indoor courts, whether the city included a 200-meter track and ice rinks, and whether the city included outdoor fields. The exact details about who will be running the facility and how much that will cost have yet to be worked out, Mata said. I think it's going to probably be a partnership. Synergy Global will probably have the bulk of it, maintaining it, managing the daily operations, the maintenance of it. The city is also to partake in that, in some form or fashion, but that's going to be worked out in the details later on. Right now, it does seem like Synergy or some other third-party management is going to come in and do the bulk of it, Mata said. The only thing the Bell family asked in return was for a 5-acre park to be included in the project that will be dedicated to Amy Doris Bell, who died at the age of 33 in May of 2014. According to her obituary, Amy Bell established the Amy Doris Bell Donor Fund at the Permian Basin Area Foundation and supported numerous agencies who provide health and wellness for children throughout the United States and the world. Younger siblings will now have a place to play while their brothers and sisters compete, Mata said. According to city officials, the Bell family has routinely provided green spaces, parks, playgrounds, and schools over the last 60 years. In addition, they've cooperated with Grow Odessa and the City of Odessa on multiple industrial developments, including Mission Dorado, Parks Legato, and Parks Bell Ranch North. The Bell family is ready and willing to be partners with the City of Odessa and any other significant corporate groups to make the dream of a high-quality sports complex a reality for all Odessians, Larry Bell said in a news release. We know firsthand that quality of life is such an important part of making Odessa a special place to live, work, and play. We continually work to make that a part of all our projects. Mattis said the new complex will not include ice rinks, but he has spoken with people about the desire to have a place for kids to play hockey and figure skate. We're going to work together to try to get something done for them. Now we've submitted some plans to be about an ice rink, so we know the city has some land that we own. So we're going to look into that, see what we can do about that, so maybe we can offer them some land that they can use for that, and hopefully I can get that going, he said. Odessa man arrested on aggravated assault charge. A 34-year-old Odessa man was arrested early Tuesday morning after his wife told officers he assaulted her and fired a gun while standing over her. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a disturbance call from the 7200 block of Bellini Street around 1:20 a.m. Tuesday. When officers arrived, a 34-year-old woman told them she got into an argument with her husband, Christopher Smith, while driving, and when they arrived home, he grabbed her by the throat and pushed her into one of their trucks, causing her to fall, the report stated. The woman told officers Smith went into the house, retrieved a gun, and while standing over her, fired approximately 3 rounds in an unknown direction, the report said. According to the report, officers found a 40-millimeter Glock on the couple's entertainment center in the house and 2 spent bullets casings in the bed of a Ford F-150. Smith was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. He remained in the Ector County Jail Tuesday evening. No bond has been set yet. Tip leads to drug arrest. An Odessa man was arrested Thursday on a felony drug charge after officers found more than 5 grams of cocaine in his possession. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers with the Modessa Violent Crimes Task Force received a tip. Damian Rees was selling cocaine in Odessa. On May the 25th, officers pulled Rees over on North Moss Avenue for having an unauthorized sun screening device on his Lincoln MKZ. Inside the car, officers found 1.8 grams of cocaine in a baggie hidden in the carpet next to the air vent under the driver's seat, the report stated. At his apartment, they found 4.4 grams of cocaine, baggies, and a digital scale. Rees admitted he'd been selling cocaine for a few weeks, the report stated. Rees was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of manufacturing / delivery of a controlled substance, a first-degree felony punishable by 5 years to life in prison. He was released Monday after posting a $75,000 surety bond. Trio arrested on drug charges, 130 grams of cocaine seized. Odessa police detectives seized more than 130 grams of cocaine and made 3 felony drug arrests last week. According to an Odessa Police Department report, detectives with OPD's intelligence unit, along with the investigators from the Texas Department of Public Safety, contacted Jorge Lara, Raw Palma, and Carlos Hernandez Palma May 24th as they were sitting inside a Lincoln Continental in a Tres Hermanas Boulevard parking lot. A canine officer alerted on the vehicle and detectives found 130 grams of cocaine in the driver's side door compartment, the report stated. They also found 1.6 grams of cocaine on Raw Palma and 0.9 grams of the drug on Hernandez Palma. Laura, who was the driver of the car, was arrested on suspicion of manufacturing slash delivery of a controlled substance, a first-degree felony punishable by 5 years to life in prison. Raul Palma was arrested on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance, and Hernandez Palma was arrested on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance and a federal supervised release warrant out of New Mexico. Laura is being held in the Ector County Jail on a U.S. Marshals hold and a $75,000 surety bond. Raul Palma was released after posting a $20,000 surety bond, and Hernandez Palma is being held on the New Mexico warrant and surety bonds totaling $7,000. Man accused of brandishing weapon outside bar. A 30-year-old Watagua man was arrested Sunday after three men told authorities he pointed a gun at their heads and asked them if they had a problem. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, deputies were dispatched to a disturbance call at Dos Amigos on Golder Avenue, and when they arrived, three men in their 20s said Andrew Aguilar pulled a gun from his waistband as he was leaving the bar, and they feared for their lives when he pointed it at their heads. Deputies found a 9mm Taurus in Aguilar's possession, and he was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of three counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and one count of unlawfully carrying a weapon in a prohibited space. Aguilar was released after posting surety bonds totaling $90,000. Woman accused of committing more than two dozen thefts. A convicted felon with 10 pending cases was arrested Thursday in connection with 21 felony theft cases. According to police and court documents, Sandra D. Allen, who also goes by Sandra D. Hudson, age 55, is accused of stealing thousands of dollars worth of items from a handful of stores since last fall. Texas Department of Public Safety records show Allen, 55, has been arrested numerous times on theft, burglary, trespassing, stolen car, and assault charges, and served multiple stints in prison. According to Ector County District Court records, Allen was charged with criminally trespassing at the Music City Mall in November of 2021 and February 22. She was released from the Ector County Jail each time after posting a $500 surety bond. Allen was arrested and later indicted for burglarizing a Quick Track store March 2022 and was released from Ector County Jail after posting $14,000 in surety bonds. 6 months later, she was indicted for allegedly stealing clothes and bath sheets from Walmart, court documents show. 2 months after that, in January of 2023, Allen was indicted for allegedly stealing plants, cigarettes, and cleaning supplies over the course of 4 days from HEB, DK, and Kent Quick. Warrants were issued after those indictments but were never served, and on May 8th, Allen was indicted in 10 separate cases alleging she stole food, purses, cosmetics, electronics, and tools from HEB, EZ Pawn, and Home Depot on 10 separate dates from November 19th through April the 2nd. On May 17th and May 19th, Odessa police also asked for arrest warrants to be issued for Allen in 5 other theft cases. According to OPD records, officers believe Allen walked into Best Buy on January the 3rd, January the 5th, January 6th, and January the 7th, and walked out with shopping carts filled with items totaling $4,735, $1,195, $1,358, and $699, respectively. They also allege she walked out of the Lowe's Home Improvement store on April the 6th with $998 worth of items. On Thursday, Allen was arrested on failure to appear warrants in the Music City Mall and Quick Track burglary cases. The warrants issued following the November 28th, January 23rd, and May 8th indictments and the 5 arrest warrants issued May 17th and May 19th. Ector County Jail records show Allen remains in custody on surety bonds totaling $341,500. Odessian accused of using golf club on girlfriend. A 22-year-old Odessa man with a history of domestic violence was arrested Sunday morning after his girlfriend and a witness told police he attacked her with a golf club. According to an Odessa Police Department report, an unidentified person called 911 around 11 a.m. Sunday to report an assault was taking place at West 3rd Street and Blackstone Avenue. When officers arrived, a 19-year-old woman said she and Carlos Demetrio Orozco began fighting over property inside their vehicle, and during the argument, Orozco began punching her in the head, arm, leg, and back, the report stated. She also told officers Orozco tried to literally kick her out of the car, and he got a golf club off the back seat and began hitting her legs and body with it. The 911 caller, who asked not to be identified, gave a recorded interview with the officers. They said they witnessed Orozco punching the woman and attacking her with the golf club, the report stated. The woman had fresh scratches and bruises to her face, neck, shoulder, and arm, the report stated. The back of her head and multiple knots and bumps, and her left side behind her ear area was swollen, the report stated. She stated that Orozco had been assaulting her since Monday, May the 22nd. Orozco, who also had a blackjack and brass knuckles in his possession, was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. According to Ector County District Court records, Orozco was placed on 7 years deferred adjudication in September after pleading guilty to assaulting a different woman he was dating in December of 2021. He'd been convicted of assaulting her in May 2021, too. He remained in the jail Wednesday on a $100,000 surety bond. Desert Ridge Park breaking ground soon. Residents in the Desert Ridge area can expect to see construction begin on a new 5-acre park within the next 30 days, said Larry Lee, who donated the land to the city of Odessa 9 months ago. The infrastructure for the park, which will be at Dawn Avenue and Palo Duro Drive, was also donated by Lee and Leeco Properties. We're going to put in a concrete walking trail, 2 dog parks for small and large dogs, and 2 pavilions. We're going to provide 4 basketball courts, playground equipment, all of the infrastructure with that, Lee said. The Odessa Parks Foundation is also going to help put in some additional playground equipment. We're proceeding full blast. They're in the process of ordering equipment now, and they expect the park will be finished by the end of the year, Lee said. The family wants to do it, and Leeco Properties has been part of Odessa for a long time. And, you know, we donated the land for that new fire station, too, he said. The plans for the park were provided by ADC Associates at no cost to the city. It's a neighborhood park. It's going to be well-designed. It's going to have water wells, and it's going to have state-of-the-art everything, Lee said. Free Fishing Day, slated for June the 3rd. Each year on the first Saturday in June, anglers across the state pack their tackle boxes and get their fishing poles ready for the Texas tradition of Free Fishing Day. This year, Free Fishing Day lands on June 3rd, and Texans can fish on any public water body in the state without a fishing license. Free Fishing Day is a wonderful opportunity for anglers to share their knowledge, skills, equipment, and love for fishing with a new participant. Yet it's also more than that, Craig Bonds, Texas Park and Wildlife Department Inland Fisheries Director, said in a news release. We hope those trying fishing on this special day will also learn that purchasing a license is an act of conservation. A fishing license purchase is one of the simplest and most effective way people can support fisheries, science, and management. Anglers help the conservation effort with their license purchase, with 100% of fishing license fees going to TPWD. The fees, fund on-the-ground conservation efforts, such as fish stocking, that help make Texas one of the best places in the country to fish. To help celebrate Free Fishing Day, TPWD offers multiple resources to provide fun, high-quality fishing opportunities to anglers of all skill levels and ages. ECISD, trying to make Narcan widely available. The opioid overdose treatment Narcan is now available across Ector County ISD campuses, and there are more than 100 people trained now. Those who have been trained are nurses, administrators, first responders, and other certain staff. They have used Narcan twice since it was implemented. We have trained all the nurses and health services staff and are slowly adding first responders and those who would like to be trained. Also, our police officers have already been trained. We have used Narcan twice since the implementation, Health Services Director Rebecca Rhodes said in an email. ECISD Police Chief Jeff Daniels said they have seen more overdoses in the public than on campuses. He added that having it throughout the district is a huge benefit to students and staff to have it there. We have a society that has fentanyl in it, and so we need to be prepared in case we come across those emergencies to be able to help those that are in need, Daniels said. He added that the fentanyl that's really dangerous to students is what's coming across the border because it's made by the cartels. It's unregulated and not produced in a legitimate lab. Most likely it's made in Mexico, but it could be another location overseas. In a shipment of 1,000 pills, 999 may be okay, but there could be just one pill that has too much in it. He said they see it in pill form. Unfortunately, we see it in our society and fentanyl poisoning. It's really a one-way street if you get it. There's not much help unless you have Narcan on site to save you, Daniels said. He added that his officers have carried Narcan for 3 to 4 years. From what he has seen, everyone is on board with being trained to use it. It's just one of those tools that you can give them to better equip them to protect our kids, and I think everybody was on board for that and excited to get more of it. There's only so many of us out there, and there are so many schools, but now this puts it on every campus, Daniels said. He added that a lot of agencies have gotten away from testing narcotics in the field because it can be toxic if you handle it with your bare hands. Daniels said there is field testing for marijuana, cocaine, and methamphetamines. Depending on what it looks like, they may not test it because it could be fentanyl. We'll file the charge, send it to the court, and let them send it to the lab to be tested. It's a process, Daniels said. It's a very dangerous drug. Rhodes said there are times when Narcan is harder to get, like at the beginning of the school year and last summer. The antidote was obtained through a grant from More Narcon, Please. She was only able to get 48 boxes initially, but she was also able to get it from PermaCare. I could only get so many at a time, but I can get it from several different places, Rhodes said. There are two doses in a box. It is administered through the nose. It's super easy, Rhodes said. She added that people bought into the importance of having Narcan available. It is also in most nurses' emergency to-go bags. Although there haven't been a lot of occasions to use Narcan on campuses, Rhodes said there's always that risk. A student could take something in the morning and it could take effect a couple of hours later. It's not always an immediate effect, so sometimes it can take a little while, she added. Anybody who takes an opioid, whether it's prescribed or illicit, can have an overdose, Rhodes said. So it's available for everyone, she added. Rhodes noted that it's important that the district has taken this step. It could save somebody's life in a risk-benefit scenario. I think it's super important because the benefit way outweighs the risk of not having it, she added. At some point, she could see students, especially seniors, being trained to administer Narcan. I had some discussions with some of my nurses about doing that with our seniors, just giving them a quick rundown on how to get it, especially now that it's becoming more available because the FDA approved it to be over-the-counter, Rhodes said.